You're listening to The Sports Rabbi, hosted by Josh Halichman.
We're back with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Halichman. Welcome aboard to the Sports Rabbi Show. We bring you the best of Israeli sports all the way up north to Nahariya, down south Eilat, and all the great cities in between Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, Haifa, Beersheba, and many, many more. We'll also throw Netanya in there as well. And of course, it is the end of the week show. And on the end of the week show, we go through all the latest in Israeli soccer news. And there is plenty to talk about between the four European matches. And of course, there was some off the pitch activity, unfortunate activity as well that we'll get to. And if you like this podcast, and I know that you do, make sure you subscribe to us, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and leave us a five-star rating. Make sure you subscribe at any of those places. Check us out at The Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, sportsrabbi.com for the latest and greatest news in Israeli sports in both languages, English and Hebrew. We bring it to you both. Roi Shalom, did you know that the Sports Rabbi is going to have a huge announcement within the next couple of weeks? A massive, mega, huge, massive, mega, gigantic announcement. Did you know that?
I guess I know now. I don't know about what yet, but I guess now I know.
Now you know.
Like, you're not even telling me stuff, you know? I'm just like all the listeners out there, like, hearing this amazing news. I'll try to get the news, the behind the scene news after the show, I guess, but I don't know if you'll tell me or not. We'll see about that.
If you check your WhatsApp, I just sent it to you right now, but I'm not going to announce it yet. We're going to wait. We're still in the process. We're near the finish line. Mm-hmm. We're like close, very close to the finish line of this project. That our staff here at the Sports Rabbi have been working on. And we don't want to, you know, we want to make sure it's working in perfect form before we go public with that. So good news coming up. And you just saw that good news, didn't you, Roi Shalom?
Oh, wow. I'm surprised. I'm really surprised because this just came out of left field for me. So
do you see how the Sports Rabbi is growing leaps and bounds, my friend?
Wow. So you know what? We should open it up. You know, guess, if you're listening to this, you should guess what.
Yes, the Sports Rabbi. Check it. Yeah, send us on Twitter, at The Sports Rabbi. You can guess what is going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks. And I can guarantee you, because The Sports Rabbi has a huge month of August, the Israel national basketball team is playing all over the place, including Auburn University. The Auburn Tigers are in town. They're playing Romania in two exhibition games. They're playing Georgia. And then, of course, at the end of August, the Sports Rabbi heads to Prague in the Czech Republic for Eurobasket 2022. The Sports Rabbi will be all over the Israel national team, live and in person over in the Czech Republic, and looking forward to that. And this is one of the things that we wanted to make sure we would have rolling by the time the Sports Rabbi would be there. So that is the game plan, Roi Shalom. But it's big news, isn't it?
Wow. Really, really surprising to see the news and it's exciting. It's super, super exciting.
Yeah, super exciting. So you know what super exciting is? I gotta tell you, I'm super excited that I was totally wrong. I owe Francis Perrot a massive apology. He is the greatest player that has ever stepped foot from outside of this country to play with Maccabi Haifa. He is a fabulous striker, a wonderful. He knows how to score goals. He has a nose for the net. Unbelievable. Maccabi Haifa, 4-0 winners over Olympiakos in the second leg of second round UEFA Champions League qualifying. And my, oh my, 5-1 on aggregate, they win. They go into Piraeus, Greece, okay? And they basically dismantle Olympiakos. I mean, they totaled them. And I'm not just saying they were fluky goals, right? You saw the goals. These are technical soccer, football plays. I mean, it was just fabulous to watch. I don't even know what else to say. Francis Perrot with a brace, with two goals. Omer Atsili with one of the goals. And yes, we'll get to Omer Atsili shortly if everybody's wondering what's been going on with him. And Muhammad Abu Fani with a quite the strike to put the cherry on top of Maccabi Haifa and Barak Bachar. He said it was his biggest win as a coach. Not only was it his biggest win, apparently Olympiacos has been knocking on his door ever since, and they probably offered him a bundle of money to bring him, though they already just signed one of the Israeli players that did not play against them, but from Hapoel Tel Aviv, Doron Lindner. We'll talk about that as well. How is it possible that Maccabi Haifa goes into Greece and just basically totals an Olympiacos team that nary and never loses at home, especially in qualifying for Champions League European stuff? What the hell was going on there?
So just putting it in perspective, Olympiacos hasn't lost in a qualifying Champions League or European in general in the past 6 years. This is how crazy this is. And not only that, you know, losing like that and, you know, having the coach fired 24 hours later after he was with the team for 4 years is crazy, because Haifa played like a team that is so much better than Olympiacos. And that's the crazy part about it, because Olympiacos wasn't even dangerous against Maccabi Haifa. When you were watching the game now, Tyrone Cherry with the beautiful strike, you know, from a free kick to open up the game. I think it was like around the 8th minute or something
like
that.
Yeah, I'm
sorry
about that. Early on. Yeah, I mentioned Omar Itzil. Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. I got confused there. I was thinking about the first game when Omar Itzil scored in the first minute. I apologize. That's right. That was a brilliant free kick. I mean, Tyrone Cherry, by the way, he is absolutely a cut above all the other players that have played in this country for a number of years. The guy's amazing. He's just not just his free kicks, it's his passes, it's his vision.
It's the leadership that he gives to Maccabi Haifa. He's the guy that is really, you know, pushing them to the next level, you know, when playing the game. And it's beautiful to watch. And now this is the third year now of Barak Bachar. And we talked about it even last year that, you know, when going into the second year, and we saw that also with Beersheba back then, you know, it's getting better and better. And now in the third year, not only that, he also got all of the players he wanted. You know, if he wanted the big striker like Pierrot that, you know, was just, you know, the
amazing. Olympiacos defenders. He was amazing. He was amazing. I mean, he was amazing.
It's not only the goals. It's him, you know, stopping the ball in front of the Olympiacos defenders. It's him, you know, giving the extra pass and running deep inside. He was a player that, I don't want to say men. He was a man among boys, but he was just dominating Olympiacos that has some, you know, real known veteran defenders that you're like, okay, these are Champions League guy. Now, Pierrot, just to remind you all, came from the second league in France. You know, we're not talking about him being one of the top strikers in Champions League or someone that even played Champions League in the past couple of years, but this is the Maccabi Haifa scouting department really eyeing their, you know, eyeing and putting the emphasis on one guy, and that was Pierrot. And we all summer long, they were like, this is the guy we want. This is the guy we want. And you understand why. He's just strong, you know, fast. He can finish. We saw him finish twice with two headers.
Yes.
Over Olympiacos defenders. And he just gives Barak Bachar a different type of player and lets him play with a different formation that we usually see from him. You know, they were playing with Dean David. They were playing 5-3-2. And they were playing with Dean David and with Pierrot. And you know, that is something that Maccabi Haifa couldn't do last year because there was pretty much only Dean David. And that also came only pretty much in the, you know, not second
you know,
half. But
I have a question. I have a question about Dean David.
Yeah.
What did you think of his game?
It wasn't perfect.
Why does Haifa media put him out, interview him after the game. Could you explain it to me? Why wouldn't you like give us a little bit of Francie Perrault, like two questions maybe? You know, what wouldn't you want to hear from the guy that scored two, or Tyrone Sherry, who was masterful? I mean, I don't know. Like, I could have found so many different players to put out there. Why is Dean David? Now, it's fine. You know, he gave a nice quote and everything. But, like, why are you asking Dean David to talk about the game? Why?
Good question. And I no, think, that's,
because,
I don't know. That,
because that's Maccabi Haifa, that's why.
Yeah, I don't know. But just really, just looking at the game, you know, Barak Bachar just played, you know, just outplayed Martinez. And that's incredible. And he outplayed Olympiacos. And now they're going in to play against Limassol from Cyprus as the favorites to this coming matchup. And, you know, they are two matchups away from Champions League. So they need to beat Limassol, and then they have pretty much a tougher opponent in the Champions League playoffs. Right.
We're going to find that out this week. The draws on the 2nd of
right,
August.
Right. But they have already, you know, conference they're now stage. For sure in the conference league group stage. And they, if you ask me, they are worth Europa League group stage and not a conference league group stage. And we'll have to see and wait if that's going to happen. If they lose to Limassol, for example, they'll play in the playoffs of the Europa League. And if they lose in the playoffs of the Champions League, they'll be playing in the group stage of the Europa League. Yeah. So, just you know, an amazing win for Maccabi Haifa. Barak Bachar again. You know, we should bring it up. You know, and the question we already were asking that question before the season, and that was, you know, is he the best Israeli coach in all times? And he just, you know, it's, he's pretty much there up top. And, you know, the only thing that he's missing now is really being in this European team. From what we understand, Olympiacos want him, as you said, but he's not going to go there.
No, he's not going anywhere. This
is his stage. I think, you know, it's going to be classic if by the end of the season he will leave Maccabi Haifa for a team, whoever really wants him. And if he gets to the Champions League, you know, that is his dream, that he hasn't gotten there yet with one of his teams. And that will be the next step for Barak Bachar, an Israeli coach that really shows that he's one of the, I don't want to say top European coaches, but he deserves to be in the conversation of a really good European coach.
You know, I got to say this. I have a trivia question for you, okay? First of all, I'm excited. I'm very excited right now. I got super excited over the last 10 seconds. That's why I was a little bit in a fog when I see a video of Leo Messi arriving at his plane to come to the land of Israel because a PSG are going to be in the French Super Cup, which is good news. But I have a trivia question for you. Which Israeli player is on loan to Apollon Limassol?
Yeah, so just I think it was last week that Ido Shachar from Maccabi Tel Aviv made the transfer or move to Limassol, and you know it's going to be interesting because from what I understand, he's not going to be a full time starter over there. He's going to be pretty much a rotation guy, but you know. What a experience for him, you know, coming to Israel so much earlier than he thought he would be back here. And, you know, it's going to be interesting, even though Maccabi Haifa, with the way they've been playing and they've been playing their A game. And it's crazy to say that we are, you know, we're still in July. We should note it. that yes, we're on the verge of moving to August, but we're still in July, and Haifa is playing their A game in these games, and we've been talking about it week in and week out how important it is in this stage of the year, because this is pretty much one of the most important times of the year for the Israeli teams that are playing in Europe. And Barak Bacha is able to get the most out of his guys. And right now, when looking at this team, and again, we should also note, and we haven't even talked about it last year, but Planic was really close to leaving to AEK from Greece. They were pretty much willing to buy his buyout from Maccabi Haifa, which was, I want to say, around 1.3 or 1 point between 1.3 to 1.8 million euros, which is crazy, a crazy amount for Planic and his age and how he's been playing. But right now, especially after him, they were all waiting for this matchup to end between Olympiacos and Maccabi Haifa. But now, with Haifa really going to the next stage in Champions League, Barak Bacha is really pushing Haifa to keep Planic and extend him to a new contract. And pretty much AEK are going to be off the table from what it seems, and Haifa are willing to offer him a new contract, a contract that will be near the numbers of Sharon Cherry, the highest paid player for Maccabi Haifa. And that is huge, because him and Goldberg and Josh Cohen has really been the three anchors of the Haifa defense, with Cohen, of course, being the goalkeeper. But now, with the two new wingbacks,
Cornu, by
with
the way, Pierre Cornuda was great. He was
yeah, really.
really good. And he fed that ball perfectly for that diving header by Pierron. But he was good. It wasn't that he was really, really good. And Sundergren was fine. But Cornu is good. I mean, this guy is, you can see this is, again, it makes a big difference when you decide to build your roster properly and you bring players in a timely fashion where they can actually train with the team. And you saw this happen this year with Maccabi Haifa. Barak Bahar made sure to bring these guys in early and on time to ensure that they would have a chance to make it into the group stages of the Champions League. That's ultimately, is that the goal? Of course, it's always the goal, right? Because there's so much money at stake. And I'm sure Yankalev Shakhter would love that money. But he also knows realistically that to make it to the group stage of the Champions League is so difficult, especially in the new format. But the Europa League is definitely a possibility. And I the fact that and obviously the Conference League is already in the bag. They already, if they have to go to the Conference League, they could be a threat to win the Conference League. They could be.
No, I think that's far.
That's far. All right, we'll see. Who knows?
For
I'm
me, it's
already
far,
dreaming, right? I'm dreaming already.
but we will say,
after the
going
last game, I'd say they are. I'm emotional.
but
What can I
we,
tell you?
yeah, for sure. But we can say that, they if they I don't want to even go to go there, because I don't want to even think about them going to the Conference League, which is pretty much the worst outcome that can be going forward for Maccabi Haifa. But yeah, they are worth, maybe a quarterfinal Conference League. And that is a huge step, and that's also one of the reasons we have Conference League. Again, I'm gonna bring it up, which you don't like to hear it, to hear about it. But just saying, just finishing off with this, Pierrot was Maccabi Haifa's biggest transfer in team history, 1.8 million, and Just this win gave Haifa 3 million. So just, understanding how important it is to go up a stage and the money that is from that's put the Champions League, because Champions League money is so different from even your Europa League and Conference League money. It's not even close, and all of those are, and even the Conference League is not even close to the Israeli League, just to put it in perspective. But we're seeing this summer, and we should know this out, things that we haven't seen in the Israeli soccer before, which is, for example, Pirlo coming for this amount, which is in the top 10. I think it's top maybe even 5 in Israeli transfers of all time. You also have Somani from Beersheba that is also in the top 10. You have Jovanovic that came in from Maccabi Tel Aviv last year that is also in the top 5 in all time. So we're seeing teams willing to spend money, and these are teams that are playing in Europe. And that is the whole point of the importance of Conference League. It's not only even Conference League, it's tickets. Other than receiving money from the league itself, like the Champions League or the Conference League, whatever it is, you're getting money from that. You're also getting money from the fans coming in and week out. So there's a new thing in Israel, and we should note it out, and that is pretty much also active scouting, which we're seeing happen. We're seeing Maccabi Haifa right now hitting on their three players that they really were active on and were really pushing for these players to come into Israel.
They did a good job.
And right now, that helped them get past Olympiakos, which,
they looked terrible. By the way, Olympiakos looked awful.
Yeah.
They were not really good. I mean, they were not good. I mean, they were bad. They were really bad. That was a disaster. Roy Shellam, should we move on to the story with Omer Sealer? Let's talk first about Hapoel Beersheva, Maccabi Haifa, and then we'll get on to that stuff. So Maccabi Tel Aviv, we'll start with them here. 0-0. Sure. You were at the game against Zera, a listless performance. Not a very good showing. Vladan Ivic was not happy after the game.
Understatement.
Yeah, he aired his grievances against his players in the media. I think he was disgusted with the effort that was put in by the Maccabi Tel Aviv players, 11,000 and change at the game. The fans could not have been happy sitting in the stands watching a extremely poor display. The players didn't show up, and these were the main players, right? He didn't start Oscar Gloch, and that's a whole story in itself, with his father. I'm sure that's not why he didn't start, but he didn't start him. I mean, they started their top players for this game that were available, because Eran Zahavi, New Biton, just coming back from injury, did get some time at the end of the game. It was a pathetic performance. So you were there, you saw it live and in person. You want to break us down what happened in this fine 0-0 draw?
So literally, it's one of those 0-0 that you're like, it's a 0-0 special. Let's erase it from the history, because no one will ever remember or want to remember this game. Because there was literally like nothing even special, nothing exciting about it. Just 90 minutes of boredom. I'll put it just like that. But the funny thing is that the most important thing that came out of it was pretty much Ivic's press conference and the way he spoke, and saying that, players that are here for 3 to 4 years, and even, the veteran guys on this team, heads up, because the easy days are over, and there's no more, if you're a veteran, you're in. Like, that, you know, he was trying to be nice and remember the days he was here, just a couple of years ago, and give those players some credit for it, because they were here during his good days. But he's sick of it by the third game, the third official game of the season. And he said, I understand now. He's pretty much saying it. Now I understand why Maccabi Tel Aviv needed a new coach. Why this team has not won any title and finished in third place that last year. And he said it out loud. He understands why. And there's a lot of criticism. You know, it's not only to the players, it's also to the management and things that have been going on, you know, the last couple of years for Maccabi Tel Aviv of, you're doing a really bad job, or you did a really bad job, and I'm here to fix it.
It's gonna take him some
Now,
time. He found that out
it,
after last game.
yeah, yes,
When you're
and
sitting there, I have a question. When you're sitting there, what are you thinking at this? What are you thinking while you're watching this game? What are you saying?
that the okay, so it was easy. First of all, it was boiling hot, and it was disgusting outside. Humidity was as high as I felt it in, I don't know, in years. Like, seriously, it was really not fun to be out there. So I can somewhat understand the players not trying to push, especially after winning 3-0 the first game. But you just see a team that doesn't want to play. You see players that are not committed for really playing their best, you know, soccer. You're seeing a team that, you know, they are pretty much listening to the coach and working by his philosophy in a way. But, you know, they're like, let's not allow a score. You know, let's finish with a clean sheet this game. And they got it. You know, it's three games in a row, and we talked about last year how bad the Maccabi Tel Aviv defense was. But the clean sheet happened because, first of all, Zira is a really bad team. I'm sorry, like, to say it like that, but compared to Maccabi Tel Aviv, they're a really bad team. And even in times, and I want to say this, Zira was more dangerous when they tried to do something in this game, were more dangerous than Maccabi Tel Aviv, and the Maccabi Tel Aviv defenders had a tough time against a couple of Zira players, which shouldn't have happened. Now, we should say that not all of the starters were playing, as you said, and I want to note that the second, you know, we saw Dan Glaser come in, and we know Dan Glaser is one of Vladimirovich's favorite players because he works as hard as there is on the pitch. When we saw Neil Beaton come into defense as well, you saw some more confidence and someone that is willing to find players, you know, and you know, not just pass a basic, you know, regular pass to just let's get the ball out of my leg, that I won't be the one making the mistake. But he didn't see a lot of movement by the players, not a lot of commitment. You know, I saw Bradley Kubas for me was one of the top players, and Van Overen was one of the top players. But again, top players is something that is hard to say in a game that is was just that bad. But they
Take
were,
that with a grain of salt, as they say.
yeah, they were more committed, I'll just put it like that, than different players on the team. And they're gonna have RS Saloniki next week. They're gonna be at home against them. I saw the highlights of the RS Saloniki game. They weren't looking too great themselves. So
No, they're
if
not
you ask
that
me,
good.
it's a 50-50 match. And what is the advantage for me for Maccabi Tel Aviv is that Vladimirovic is pretty much he's a Serbian, but in heart, and you know, the way he's been, his career, his path has taken him. He's also Greek in a ways, and he was watching a lot of RS Saloniki also last year. And even though RS Saloniki made a lot of changes to their roster, he knows the team. So for me, that is a small, slight advantage for Maccabi Tel Aviv coming in. And not only that, I think that the mentality coming into this week in Maccabi Tel Aviv's Kiryat Shalom training facility is going to be way different than
Oh,
what.
I'm sure it's going to be.
Yeah, because I'm sure that, and I'll put it like this: Girardeş, Saburi, Kanikovski, Jovanovic, no one's spot is guaranteed with the way they've played this past year, this past week, sorry. And you know, there's a lot of young players that are looking for their chance to really take their spot. If it's, you know, Mauro Kandil or even Guy Mizrahi, if it's Roy Revivo on the left side of the defense, when we saw already, we saw him with the youth, with the youth national team get to the finals. If it's Oscar Gloch that, you know, came in during the second half, and we didn't even talk about it, but during the week, Oscar Maxim Gloch, the father of Oscar Gloch, his a recording of him saying that Ivic is a terrible coach, is doesn't have idea what he's doing. There's a reason why he was kicked out of England the way he did, and he has no knowledge in soccer. All in a recording was leaked to the press, and I want to say and give a lot of credit to Vladimir Ivic that the practice after it happened, and that was the night before or the day before, he came to Gloch, pretty much hugged him and said, "I don't care from what people talk about me behind the scenes. Whatever is best for the team, and if you'll show you're good, you're gonna play. And you know, it just doesn't matter what people say about me, because he just really doesn't care, even if it's a player's dad." And the dad also, of course, apologized after and said that he was planted in a trap. So, you know, it could have been so much worse, right? It could have been, you know, Oscar Gloch is out of the roster, and that's it, and they're willing to sell him for whatever just because this happened. But really, Ivic took it like a pro and really dealt with it
Yeah,
perfectly for the kid. And there's, yeah.
he was very good. He handled it very well. He handled the press conference very well. There's no question about that, Roy Shalom. That's for sure. And he, listen, it's not the kid, right? I mean, like his father's, we already know what his father is. It's Jakub Buzaglo, version two. I mean, that's basically what the story is here. There's
And
no.
maybe this is the last time we hear from him. You know what? And if that's the learning, the lesson he'll learn with his kid being such a star, maybe that's the lesson that, you know, he needs to shut up if he wants his kid to really reach the highest level that this kid could really reach, because he has star potential.
Yeah, there's no question about that for sure. Of course, we're here with Roy Shalom, sports rabbi, wrapping up the Israeli soccer. Let's quickly move to the other two games that took place in the next couple of minutes, and then we'll shift over to the whole Atsilim Micha stuff. Be'er Sheva also played a pathetic game. They win 1-0 with like a 90, 90th minute goal. They did what they had to do. They beat Dynamo Minsk in an empty stadium. Elena Barta wasn't happy about that. This was a home game for Minsk because an Israeli team couldn't go to Belarus due to the conflict going on with Ukraine and Russia, of course. They didn't show very much. It was hot, blah, 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 and blah. Your thoughts on the game? I mean, I watched all these games, bits and pieces. I've seen all the highlights. There was not much to really talk more than 30 seconds about this game, really. It was awful.
Just disappointing in a way, you know. The same way I was talking pretty much about Maccabi Tel Aviv, you could say the same about Beersheva, just a disappointing performance. But you know, I really hope that Beersheva can, and they're talking about it, that they're gonna make the next step now going into a more important game. You know, when you come against such an opponent that you're like, we're gonna beat them easily, sometimes it's tough because you're like, okay, this should be easy, and then there's some pressure, and then so forth and so forth, and then you're like, oh damn it, we can't even score. And you know, I saw Beersheba, and there were also like nothing special about their game. It wasn't low tempo, you know, not exciting. Rotem scored a goal just because the Minsk goalkeeper made a mistake that, let's put it out there, he shouldn't be, you know, he shouldn't be a goalkeeper in a conference league, even a conference league qualifier, making that type of mistake, just a high ball to him, and he just couldn't grab it, and Hatuer was there for the rebound to really head it in. Hatuer is pretty much his joker, and then he's Sparta's joker. He's just scoring every game, and that is also fun to watch. So
Right.
that
That was
is,
also
you
great.
know, yeah, it's important to have that player that you can really trust off the bench that will really give you that extra factor. You know, we saw Tom Mohamed in action. We saw Soumane in action. They need some more time. I hope that against Lugano, they will really make that next step towards getting better, because they can play so much better, this team. And Barta knows it, Beersheba knows it, and everyone knows it. So a real test, you know, Maccabi Tel Aviv and Beersheba, they're pretty much for me on the same boat right now. Just Beersheba having their roster more ready than Maccabi Tel Aviv, but this is their time to really ramp it up and bring it to a next level, because if not, they're out. You know, Lugano is a Swiss team that will give problems. You know, there, I also see this game as pretty much a 50-50 chance. So it's going to be interesting. It's 2 interesting weeks for two teams, and I really hope all three teams will be able to reach
Lugano's going to
somewhat
be
of a group
tough.
stage.
Lugano's going to be tough. The Swiss League is very good. In a minute here, Maccabi Netanya. Listen, they played very well against a very hard team in Istanbul Başakşehir. They had over 11,000 fans at the Netanya Stadium. They did a wonderful job. I think that it's a great look for. For Netanya, I'm sure they're disappointed that they didn't score a goal. They came very close in the 95th minute to tie it up, and they could have sent it into extra time. It didn't happen. Benny Lam's got to be happy. I think all in all, they're disappointed because they're athletes and they want to win, but it just wasn't meant to be. They had a tough draw, and they have to just continue playing well in in the Israeli league in order to make sure that they get back to that point, Roy Sean.
And the most, you know, important thing that I take out of these two games is Netanya being disappointed. They being disappointed that, you know, they came out as the losers. Now, looking into the contest, looking in, you were like, it's gonna be Başakşehir, maybe even easily, like on paper, if you were like betting wherever, in Vegas, whatever, you would say it's an easy Beşiktaş, you know, leg. But no, Netanya was really competitive. They were looking straight in the eyes of Beşiktaş, you know, in these 2 weeks. The second game, the home game, wasn't as good, and we should note it. It wasn't as good as the way they played in the first leg in Turkey. But really, a really gutsy, great performance by Benny Lam's squad that showed that Netanya is building something right. And clear in the right direction to really make steps to become maybe in the next couple of years a team that can compete in Europe, that can maybe get to a conference league group stage at some point. And that is something you need to build. You can't
right,
on your
right.
first year.
And, and they've got to stay the course, meaning this can't
right.
be like, you know, everybody's got to stay the course there. The ownership's got to stay. Everything has to stay the course. They can't all of a sudden decide to
sell all of the players.
Right. Have to stay the course. And that's the most difficult thing here in Israeli soccer, is staying the
right.
course, is sticking to a plan. And, you know, you may see that in, you know, in professional leagues such as like the NHL, right? The Montreal Canadiens, they have to compete at the highest level, right? Because they have to sell out over 21,000 seats a game. It's hard to rebuild. It's hard to sell a fan base on a process, right? Like the 76ers, right? They went through the process. They're still processing mm-hmm. the process. It's very hard to do it. Can Netanya hold that course? Right now, the Montreal Canadiens are going through a process. They're trying to build a young, exciting team with hope. And I think they're doing a good job with it. And they're also doing, and I think part and parcel with that is the media savviness of the team as to how they are making people very accessible to speak, to go onto radio shows, to go into the newspapers, to have press conferences every 5 minutes with the general manager after every move, right? Those are good mm-hmm. things for franchises. Like the New York Knicks could learn a little bit about that. There are franchises that are, you know, they want to hide away from the media. Now, Netanya is not a very big club, right? It's not Maccabi Tel Aviv. It's not Maccabi Haifa. Maccabi Haifa loves to hide from the media. I alluded to that earlier. They love to hide from the media. We're going to get to a story now in a minute that they, you know, I'm sure they'd love to bury, but they're not going to be able to. But the bottom line is that Netanya has to stay the course. They do have fans. It shows you that there were 11,000 people. Okay. Now, I'm not saying everybody was a Netanya fan, but certainly 95% of those people are, and potential fans to come back to other games. You're telling me that Netanya can't sell 7,000 season tickets, 8,000 season tickets? They for sure can sell that. So that is something that they really have to work on. Again, I don't know what they're doing on in terms of media, in terms of going out to the neighborhoods, and in terms of trying to reach the average person. Now, obviously, they did a pretty good job if they filled that stadium up. That is very good. They have potential. There is potential that is sitting on this team, a huge potential. Netanya is a big city, and they have a gorgeous stadium. There's no reason why they can't keep building upon that, Roy Shalom.
Yeah, and just there was a huge, tremendous hype in the city around this game. There were places to watch the game if you weren't going to the stadium. You know, there were, yeah, I heard moms that were willing to take their kids out of summer camp early because of the game. There was like really some crazy hype around it. I hope that, you know, the hype will lead up to really new season ticket holders, because in the end of the day, that's what we want to see. That what will help Maccabi Netanya financially, especially with them having a Yar Segal, which isn't, you know, one of the top, one of the top owners, like when you're looking at his wealth wise. I hope they also won't sell many of their players, if at all, because you know, for right now, it seems like this is their squad. And by the way, they are expected to sign Michael Ohana coming from Beitar Jerusalem. Apo Be'er Sheva and Ashdod, which was looked back then as one of the top Israeli talents. He went through a couple of injuries, I think also an ACL tear as well. And he came back last year for Beitar. He looked like the best player pretty much on the pitch, but there was also that, that fear that, he can get injured any second if you push him a bit too much. And coming into Netanya, he doesn't need to be that top guy. He can be a rotation guy, be a joker off the bench, or give the 60 minutes, the talented 60 minutes that he can give. And that could be a sneaky signing. And that's a signing that I really that's someone to keep an eye on a team that plays super offensive, looks to always push and run and, put some pressure on the offensive side of the pitch. So I like that. I like him with Benny Lam. Almo Quinn is just pressing on the right buttons for me day after day, move after move. And it's impressive. And it's impressive.
It's impressive. Of course, we're under the Sports Rabbi, Josh Allen, and Roy Shalom, wrapping up Israeli soccer. All right, I feel like we've led on the listeners. Okay, I feel like Channel 13. They did this. They did this on both nights, where they basically dragged you through an hour of their news until they finally showed what everybody wanted to see, which was the report on Omer Atsili and Dor Micha, who, of course, had a case that was closed by the police in regards to the minors that they had underage sex with. This has been a case that was closed about a year plus ago. They were both on Maccabi Tel Aviv. The owner, Maccabi Tel Aviv, Mitch Goldhar, as soon as really the story came out, said bye-bye, so long, farewell. He wasn't waiting for anything. The TV report by Almog Boker was, I think, very well done. They opened up a lot of rehashed stories. I think the stories that they were going back and forth on messages that were on their phones. I guess somehow this information was all leaked from the police. I guess he has good sources in the police department. What can I tell you? There was a lot of talk about drugs being offered. I still don't understand the whole story there with the drugs. Both players have, there was a lot of firestorm that came out after the first part, less so after the second. I mean, the damage was done to both players in the first. Now, of course, this was a case that there's a lot of feelings about. A lot of people have opinions about. There's no question that what both Omer Atsili and Dor Micha did was wrong. I think everybody agrees on that. I think nobody, other than a few people that will disagree on TV. Sport 5 had a fan come in and spoke about Maccabi Haifa and how he was giving back the scarves to owner Yaakov Shachar and discussed how he has a problem going to the stadium to watch the team with Omer Atsili playing on it. I mean, there's a lot of things to unpack here. It's not a good situation. Are the police going to reopen the file? I doubt it. I can't see the police reopening the file. All the groups can go scream and yell till the cows come home. I don't think they're going to do it. We've seen these reports before with Eyal Golan. We've seen it with other people. There's no, all the, somehow everybody that needs to get off on these type of things. I think the most disturbing thing in the whole story is ultimately that while Dor Micha wasn't married and wasn't dating anybody over the course of this time, at least that we knew, Omer Atsili was married and had a child, and I think had one in the oven. So, and to read some of the messages that were going back and forth, and there's also a third player, a national team player who was involved, in this also. We won't go into the speculation as to who that is, though there's a lot of hints as to who that player may be. The whole story is just very sad, unfortunate. Now, again, what they did was 3 billion% wrong. We understand that the young women who went along with this, obviously, that were involved in the story, they're not innocent in the fact that they definitely lied. They didn't tell the truth. But the players have to be smarter than what they did. They lied about their age. I think nobody's doubting that in the whole story here. And it's just a brutal story, and this is really brutal. It's a bad look. I don't think you're going to see these players ever again be called up to the national team. They had Omer Atsili in the national team for a bit over the past year. I don't think you're going to see. I mean, Micha was a non-factor anyways, but I think that they are done with the national team. I think that is finished. They both posted some Instagram stories over the last 2 days saying that there's not a day that goes by that they don't feel sorry, and they put this behind. They're in different places. This is 2 years ago. The owners of the teams have, or at least Alona Barkhauteza, has backdoor Micha for the time being. If they reopen the case, that should be very interesting to see. They both claim that there was nothing to do with drugs here. Now, the only question I have, really, the only question, Roy Sheldon, that I have, and I'm sorry I went on this little monologue here. The only
All
question
good, all good.
I do have is that did Yaakov Shachar and Alona Barkat know about the drugs being brought up into this discussion, if it happened or didn't happen, right? Because the players deny it. It's clear that they deny it, although that there is talk about it in this thing. That to me is a little bit of a red flag over here. If they did know about it and they still went along with it. The only person really that has clean hands in this whole story, there's one person, Roy Sheldon, that can walk away and smile, and his fan base can be very proud of him. That as to what he did is Mitch
For
Goldhar.
sure.
He's the only one that
For
has no
sure.
blood on his hands in the stories, but Barkat has, Yaakov Shachar has, the players have, in the whole situation. And it's again, I don't want to say the wrong things here, because they don't want to tick off anybody. At the end of the day, the players were 3 billion% wrong. They're the ones to blame. Atsili just came out. He said, I'm not the korban. I'm not the sacrificial lamb here. The responsibility is mine, and I want to apologize on everything. Ein yom shover b'li sheni mitcharet. There's no day that goes by that I'm not ticked off, I guess, about myself. Well, I cut the vote even too at the mitziot. I guess they sensationalized what the things did. Yes, it was sensationalized. On one hand, I say, like, did we really have to reopen this whole thing up? And but again, if Almo Bokar is going to get his hands on all this stuff, it's like, well, why wouldn't I publish it, right? I'd have to be an idiot not to publish it. So it's a dirty situation. Your thoughts?
So for me, the most
And you have 10 seconds
disturbing part,
to do
for sure. Are you opening the clock?
listen,
So
we got to get to Mona's Nabur also here,
yeah.
right?
So and I honestly, yeah, no, this is more disturbing than that, even though it's not that far. But the more disturbing, the most disturbing thing for me is the way they just talked. And it's not specifically to them. This is the way they texted between each other and talking about, how these girls, and they were talking about them as girls, as like minors, not women, these girls. And
They knew they were under 18. That is for
no,
sure.
they knew. They
They
knew. They knew it.
admitted to it. They knew that they were under 18. Of course, under 18 is not really the age of whatever that I think under
Right.
18 doesn't really
It's
matter or
16.
anything.
So
It's 16, but it's still, but it's like it's the thought of, I mean, what are these
Yeah,
guys doing? What are you guys doing? You can't, I mean, like, why are you like putting yourselves in these situations?
But the way they were talking, the way drugs was easily brought into it, and this is a thing that is not only for soccer players, it's pretty much the Israeli society. And that is the thing here for me. It's so much more than just two soccer players. It's really showing about, how I see the Israel society, how I see today guys look at women, how, the drug scene has gotten here so strong that hey, if there's drugs, we want in, and it's great and whatever, and here and that. And if you think that this is, it's only these two players and there's no other type of drugs, the drugs in with different players, that's not true. Players and sports, it's all over it. And not only in sports, it's also, if we're talking about the music scene, if we're talking about chefs, if it's all over the place, and it's so easy to get it here, unfortunately. And having kids involved in it is the big issue. And I really hope that people here in Israel, people who maybe have even talked the way these two players have talked, like Dor Micha and Vatsidi, in those texts, and said to themselves, damn, in a way it's disgusting.
How stupid are you? Like, why would you, like, how stupid are you guys?
Because that's
Why
how
are
they
you
talk.
dumb?
It's literally it's like me and you texting, but that's how they text between each other, and that's the whole point of it. It's not only them, it's most of the Israeli society, if you ask me, talk like that. And that's the unfortunate way that we as a society have gone into. And I hope that, for me, as much as, Almog Bokeo's whole, piece here about, these two players, I hope that the larger piece of look how this our society is talking and how we're behaving and how and all that is the bigger picture, the more important thing coming out of it for me personally. If the police decides they're not, it's not, there's not enough evidence to really open a true investigation around
I
it.
don't see it happening.
I can't really say about that. They're on the pitch plays different. I'm gonna say it like this: Micha's career after that, just he's, from being the MVP of the Israeli League, being one of the top players here in Israel, to become a rotation type player in Beersheba, and also that you see he's like off. And even though his wife was backing him up the past couple of days of I know who you really are and how much you've changed since then, and that could happen. People do make mistakes sometimes, and sometimes
Yeah, for
you
sure,
do
for
learn from
sure.
them. But again, for me, the bigger story is the way they spoke, the way the drugs was so easily, and how easily 16-year-olds, if it's a girl, if it's a guy, a kid, could be around drugs, is the crazy stuff. And you talked about, for example, Eyal Golan and others, of how people are using their fame to take advantage of whatever. It's not only being with, just hooking up with women or guys or whatever it is. It's just using your fame to really take advantage of something, and that is the sad story about it.
Yep.
And yeah, it's hard to root for a team or a guy that that he said what he said and acted the way he acted. But behind the scenes, let's be honest, there are so much more, so many more players, so many more athletes that you are cheering for week in and week out, day after day, but are pretty much doing the same. So I hope something changes, and players even freak out because of it, and just change the mentality, because that it's it all starts from that, from people you admire and look after. So that is my monologue about this whole situation.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. I think we've, I don't know what else to say at this point, but listen, it is what it is. It's a bad story. It's going to stick around these players for the rest of their time. It will always
And I
be
see them
there.
staying with the teams. Let's put it out there.
Yes, yes,
When
yes.
looking at the.
Although Although I wouldn't be shocked if Micha, just because he is not the same player he was, if something happens or changes over there.
And Beersheba said that they are looking into it a bit deeper now
Yes, they, yeah.
after it compared to Maccabi Haifa, which we didn't hear that
Yeah,
from them.
no. Listen, they
But
don't.
again, also Barda said that, they are staying on the same course they were before that, but behind the scenes there are investigations from the Beersheba side
Yeah.
about Micha
Again,
and his
the
side
bottom
of the
line
story.
is, listen, Roy Shalom, if you're going to be a good player, you're going to get every leeway in the world, okay? It doesn't matter how much drugs you've been on, doesn't matter how many times you've been to jail. You can look at players like Steve Howe, a baseball player, Steve Howe in the 80s, how many chances the guy got because he knew how to throw a baseball. He was a good pitcher, okay? You know how it is. At the end of the day, that's the bottom line. If you have the talent, you'll get the chance. Deshaun Watson in the NFL. How did the Cleveland Browns go and sign him? I mean, think about that for a minute. The man has a rap sheet from well rap. We you know like, there's so much evidence rolling around with him. It doesn't matter. If you're going to be Omer Tsilin, you're going to be a star. You're as good as your last game, and you're going to stay there. And the minute you're not, you're going to be chucked. So if Dor Micha is not playing up to par, he's going to be a goner. I can and he will be gone so fast as well. That I can assure you. But you see, when Mitch Goldhar dumped these guys, he dumped them when they were at the top of their games. That's a big difference over here, right? Mitch said, I'm cleaning my hands of this right now, right here and right now. They are gone. And listen, that's the right thing to do, at the end of the day. Let's move over to
And
another. Yeah, go
one
ahead.
last thing, one last thing that for me was important and maybe a step forward, looking forward. And Atsidi just, a couple of hours ago, posted on his social media that he is truly sorry, as you said, that he is truly sorry and he thinks about it every day. And, every day that passes, it doesn't make it better. I hope. And I, first of all, I think it's the first time I really hear Omer Tsili really
Apologize.
say to really apologize. That's a start because we haven't heard that
We haven't heard
in
that at
the
all.
in
Well, because they were
this
afraid. You
and
see, beforehand, they weren't going to say anything because they were afraid of the whole lawsuit and the case, right? Now that it's closed and there's these threats about the reopening, so it's very easy to now come ahead and say, I'm sorry. And let me say this, okay? We're going to move on to Mona's DeBoer right now. Speaking of sorry, and I'm not going to be as nice to Mona's DeBoer here. He never said he was sorry as to the post that he made during the Hamas attacks to Israel and to Jerusalem last year when he posted all of his paraphernalia on Instagram, which was obviously, he revealed exactly what he thought, and that's fine. You can think those things, no problem. You want to play on the national team of this country, you've got to apologize. And again, Willie Ruttensteiner went to bat for him. The minute Willie Ruttensteiner was a goner, nobody on that team was going to stand up for him, and rightfully so, I got to say. Again, he made a mistake. He shouldn't have said what he said. If you want to be part of the national team, then you own up to it that you made that mistake, and you come out and publicly apologize. Now, of course, you're going to give me this. Well, he couldn't publicly apologize because, he comes from the Arab areas, and they would look at that poorly, and he'd get a lot of heat. But at the end of the day, he never did what he needed to do to stay with the team. He didn't do anything, okay? And the players didn't buy if he made an apology or not in the locker room, which was still, they claim some people claim he did, so forth and so on. All the players let him hang out to dry after the last game. So you know exactly what the players think of Mona's DeBoer. And you know what? Fine, he hung up the things. I lay the blame all over the Israel Football Association on this for even taking him back. They should have said, bye-bye, Monus. You know what? We don't need you. And they should be doubly ashamed for taking Omer Tsili also. These people have no business playing on the national team. I don't care. You say something against your country and against the people that are living in this country, you are out. You want to make a big public apology? You know what? There's two different things here, right? Because what Monus DeBoer did was not criminal. What the players did could have been ended. It could have ended up being criminal. There's no. There's the court of law, and then there's a court of public opinion. Well, Mona's DeBoer burnt his own court of public opinion when he put that thing up there. And again, I think I kind of was like the whole time, well, you know what? Listen, if the IFA made the decision to have him, the players have to accept it. They never accepted him. And then the minute Willie was gone, that was it. There was the, you know, he was the little lion cub to the Tigers here. And I don't blame Monas for leaving. Fine, goodbye and good riddance. That's it. He never came and apologized. He never put out a public statement. How does he expect? And again, I blame totally the Israel national team. And I also and it was clear also that Yossi Ben-Ayoun and the new management of the team, they didn't want him there. And that was clear because why didn't they want him there? Because if they really wanted him there, they would have basically forced him to try to make an apology or forced something to the matter. They're not interested in having him. They brought him in because they kind of had to over the last few games, and that's it. I really, Monas de Boer, I wish you a great career wherever you end up playing next. You should never, ever put on another Israel national team jersey. I'm not interested in you playing for the Israel national team. I'm not interested in hearing about you talking about the Israel national team. I really don't want to hear it. I don't care about it. And again, the blame also has to be put squarely on the shoulders of the IFA on this, massively on the IFA for allowing this nonsense, this kangaroo court to go on for over a year with this player.
Oof. Okay. So yeah, we know that my the way I see it, it's different from you. And I understand your take. But this is, also looking at this is also looking at it in a way in a political
Oh,
different
by the way,
view of it.
I'll just say one more thing. If a Jewish
Yeah, sure.
player, if a Jewish player came out and also ranked out the country, if it's for throwing Jews out of Gush Katif, or if it was against something or other or against the IFA, they also don't deserve to be on the team, okay? Because you may disagree politically with a lot of things that happen in this country. You have to be in line, and you shouldn't be political. But we know all these things are political at the end of the day. But I'm not trying to rank out the Muslim players, Christian players, Caucasian players. If you're not going to go and toe the party line, and again, I think if Monas de Boer would have come out immediately afterwards and said, "Hey, I was totally wrong," they gave him every opportunity to, he just didn't do it. So what do you, we don't need him on the team.
So I'll say this, and this is from important for me to say it the way I see it.
And you have 9 minutes.
Monas de Boer, yeah.
Yeah.
So Monas de Boer, posted that post after it was just before the whole Shomer Chomot happened, and it was also because of a person, not a personal experience, but a family experience his grandpa went through, from what I understand about the story. At the Al-Aqsa, at Al-Aqsa, that his grandpa got beat by police. I don't know. I don't want to really. I don't even. I'm not even sure about it. But that led to him post on his social media, whatever he posted, and yes, it's. If he wanted to say it in a way, was he talking about all Jews? I want to believe he didn't. I want to believe, again, maybe he did. I want to believe he didn't. Or about all Israelis. And I think he was more taking his point towards the people that were, that took it to the wrong place that led to his grandpa getting hit while he went to pray. And I think the only reason he wasn't sorry for it because of that story. Now, maybe he should have apologized for the way he talked about the whole thing. Now, again, the whole Shomer Chomot that was here after that did not help him at all, at all. Like, just ruined it more. And this Monas de Boer was the face of what is also happening in the Israeli society as well of the conflict between Arabs and Israelis. And he was just willing to say his opinion out loud, in a way. And not only that, it was it got ugly. And that is a thing that now makes me scared a bit in a way, because again, I'm not into any player, as you said, Arab, Jewish, Christian, whatever it is, going against Israel, especially when you live here. But not being able to say your opinions, to a degree, again, not go too far, but to a degree, is also a problem. And I think that, for example, Arab players, that there was a big conflict in the national team where Israeli players were telling the Arab players,
Is it Jewish players?
Jewish players, yeah, sorry, telling the Jewish players, telling the Arab players, why aren't you saying anything
Against,
after there
right.
were
The sta
after
all the
things happened?
stabbings, all the stab.
Ex
There was a whole
exactly.
stabbing thing, and the players that they wanted to try. There was all the incidents that were happening in the various different communities and all that. And where the players wanted to use their platform, but it was, listen, it was clear the players didn't want
And
Muhammad
you can't, and you just can't, because these
there. Iran
players, in a
Zahabi didn't
way,
want him there. I mean, let's be honest.
yes, let's be honest as well, and
Let's be
Sean Weissman as well,
honest. They didn't want him
and
there.
right, and not only that, these players behind the scenes think things that aren't, let's say, the cup of tea of most Israelis, or most even Israeli soccer supporters, let's say it even like that. So in a way, they rather just not say anything than say something. And that's when Mona Sabour did say something and did say his opinion. And again, I'm not saying his opinion was right, or he didn't say it exactly right, or all of that. And for me, his apology, in a way, and again, it's I'm trying to interpret, like, and understand him. I've never talked to him about it, anything, so this is literally only my opinion. But in a way, he hoped that him playing for Israel was
The
not
solution
his
was,
apology, but the trying to really, like, get out of it. And, like,
yeah, but
because
it
he could have
wasn't. That
quit
was,
that second.
yeah, he could have, and he did, but it
And
was. But
he
once
decided to continue.
the damage was done,
The
and he was a
damage was
good, the
done.
damage was
The
done, and that
damage
was
was
it.
done.
And the damage was done. And again, Willie protected him as much as he could. Like, there's no question. Willie probably told Iran Zahavi, like, listen, we need this guy. If we really want to try to,
He scored. He played well. We should note it that after the incident, he did score a lot and was a contributor, and he's one of the top scorers, the top Israeli scorers in all times, one of the,
For
and we
sure.
can't doubt it, and we just can't doubt it. And unfortunately for me, seeing him go the way he went, not because of his abilities,
Well,
but
he got booted
because
out.
he was,
Well,
like,
the way the IFA basically
he was
booted him out the
booted
door.
out
He was
of the
booted out
door.
the door. But
And that is
and again, the blame to me sits here with the
exactly is
IFA.
the IFA.
It's the IFA
That's the
from the
IFA.
beginning, the whole story. And again,
Right.
these are just really bad stories. Omer Tzili, Tor Micha, Mona Sabour, they're bad
Yeah.
stories. Another potentially bad story is
Yeah.
we're going to finish off the show with this.
Yeah.
Moshe DeMaio is now taking over Bnei Yehuda. The ownership was transferred from Barak Abramov to him, which means Barak Abramov is very close to buying Beitar Jerusalem. I don't think the American group is really a wanted entity by Moshe Chogeg and the people out there. He's Barak Abramov in a minute, like mamash a minute. Is he going to be the solution for Beitar Jerusalem? I mean, do me a favor.
Oh, I don't know anymore. But this is a big start for Beitar Jerusalem. That, first of all, Moshe DeMaio is taking the team back. And he was already the owner back then for Bnei Yehuda. He's coming back, and Barak Abramov is out the door in Bnei Yehuda, and really now looming at becoming the Beitar owner. And it just looks closer and closer. And there were a lot of problems back then with Bnei Yehuda, and that transfer. But now that when this is over, this is really a big step towards Barak Abramo becoming the owner of Beitar Jerusalem.
Yeah. All right. Where can people reach out to you, Roy Shalom?
So yeah, we spoke a lot about so many different topics today, and this was a really fun show, in different aspects. So if you have anything to comment on anything we said, really feel free at R. Shalom on Twitter, and if you wherever you and also wherever you see this podcast, so really feel free to leave in your comment. We can continue co the conversation that we started here between us and just open up it all to all of you, and hear your opinions as well. So really feel free.
Me, of course, at the Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, sportsrabbi.com for the latest and greatest news in Israeli sports. We bring it to you in both languages. Lots of stuff. One final thing, two big international friendlies. Actually, one is not a friendly, but international friendly between Roma and Tottenham on Saturday night in Haifa. And on Sunday night for the French Cup, it is PSG and Nantes. Leo Messi in the Holy Land. Exciting times. You have Sergio Ramos in the Holy Land. You have Neymar in the Holy Land. Only Mbappe is not going to be here because he's out on cards. But it looks like PSG wants that trophy, Roy Shalom. So that's exciting. That's exciting news. Roy Shalom, an honor and a pleasure to have you on board. We'll speak to you soon. Have a Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.